Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Wolf Packer Show. I'm here with Noah Fleischman, as I am every week, and we're here for another basketball update. And, you know, we're entering the home stretch here, just a handful of regular season games to go for both men's and women's basketball at NC State. So we're going to talk about what's there to look forward to for both teams over the next few weeks. And then we're also going to dive into what is going to be one of the most anticipated spring football practices of maybe program history. There's a lot to talk about, a lot of questions to answer, and a lot of excitement around the program. So we're going to touch on that, give you a little preview, because we're only less than 2 weeks away from spring practice kicking off. So we're going to talk all about that. Before we do so, just a quick housekeeping note. We're both writers for thewolfpacker.com. That is NC State's site on the On3 network. It's the fastest growing college sports recruiting analysis website out there right now. If you want to go check it out, it's thewolfpacker.com, and it is only $1 to subscribe for all of, you know, On3's premium features and the features over at our site. So that's access to our message board, premium recruiting scoops, team analysis from Noah on the men's basketball team, what's going on there. And we got baseball season coming up, and Noah's, you know, getting us prepped with a long preview by position right now. So go check all of that out on the website. It's a good time to join. Only $1 for your first month. And go check us out there. We appreciate your business. All right, Noah, let's dive in. We're going to lead off today with some basketball talk. And, you know, it's been another tough stretch for NC State's men's basketball. Since we last spoke, NC State went 0-2. They lost at home to Pittsburgh before going on the road and falling against Wake Forest. Those two losses came by a combined 7 points to, you know, hard-fought games that the Wolfpack came up just short in the final moments. Noah, we can start by just touching on the Pittsburgh game really quickly. Obviously, that was kind of, you know, back-breaking result there. Now that we're a week removed from it, do you have any kind of extended takeaways from that 67-64 loss?
I mean, they did most things well in that game except shoot free throws well, and that's what ended up costing them when they went 6-15 from the free throw line. Pitt went 18-20, and in a 3-point game, there's your difference in the result. So other than that, they played decently well on every other facet of the game. You know, they made more threes than Pitt did, and Pitt is one of the best 3-point shooting teams in the country. And they basically, look at the stat sheet, they did almost everything else better than Pitt. So that one came down to free throw shooting, and it didn't show up that way. And Kevin Keats sounded like a broken record after that game, and had it circled on his stat sheet that he had at the podium. It was all about free throw shooting, and did not go their way. So it was what it was. Not a game that they wanted to lose. Not a game they really should have lost, and not a game that, you know, they could have lost when it comes down to the NCAA tournament, which we'll talk about. But yeah, you know, at the end of the day, it wasn't their worst showing. It just ended up, you know, one fundamental thing of basketball didn't go their way and ended up hurting them pretty bad.
And you were in Winston-Salem a few days later to cover the away game at Wake Forest. It looked like it was going to be just a perfect opportunity to generate some positive momentum with a quad one road win. I mean, they go into halftime up 6. I thought the offensive execution in the first half was maybe the best I've seen against an ACC team this year. I thought they were really just playing, definitely their best performance on the road, I'd say. But I thought they looked great, dropping 45 in the first half. And then the second half, DJ Horn just went nuclear, ends up finishing the game with 31 points. I mean, it looked like everything was going to come together in that game. But, of course, things fell a bit short. Noah, in your mind, from, you know, being there by the court, you know, talking to folks after the game, what went wrong down the stretch against Wake Forest that swung that result back towards the Demon Deacons?
It really had to do with who was taking shots. I mean, DJ Horn, you know, he scored 31. He did it pretty fairly efficiently, you know, 13 of 21 from the field, which is most made buckets of the year, and I think his most attempted shots. So, you know, they found the hot hand to let it go. But the part that cost him in that game was they didn't score for the final, you know, 2 minutes of the game, and Wake Forest able to put it away. But also, you look at the backcourt other than DJ Horn. Jaden Taylor was 3-15 from the field, and Keesey Morsell was 3-8. Dennis Parker Jr. off the bench, 1-2, which is, you know, pretty fairly well. And then Michael O'Connell had one attempt, one make. You know, he dealt with foul trouble for most of the day, so he didn't see much of the court. You know, 11 minutes and four fouls. So it really came down to guys other than Nate, the guards not named UJ Horn making shots. You know, Jaden Taylor, as I said, 3 of 15 from the field, 1 of 8 from 3. Did have 5 assists in the game, but, you know, 1 of 8 from 3, 3 of 15. If he just makes 2 field goals, 2 of those, you know, 12 that he missed, they win the game. And so I think that's what it comes down to. Other guys getting going. Kevin Keats just talked about it this week of finding other players that he can get going because DJ Horn's playing at another level. Past 4 games, 20 or more points. His first time in his career where he's had this kind of stretch at the college level, which is a good thing to see, you know, him kind of making that step and becoming the scorer. But it comes down to the guys around him making shots too. You know, if you look at DJ Burns, played a pretty decent game, 14 points on 6 of 13 shooting. So, I mean, he filled the bucket, did miss some shots he'd normally make, but it really came down to guard play other than DJ Horn.
Yeah, I think DJ Burns has actually been pretty solid over the past stretch. I think he's given the Pack what they need right now. I just feel like they need, just two of the three guards right now to be on to win. I think you need DJ Horn's been the constant, right? Like, he's going to give you 20 points a night at this point. He's playing that high level of offensive basketball. But I think you just need one of Jaden Taylor or Casey Morsell to step up on any given night. And if those two guys are hot at the same time, then I think you have a good chance to beat some really good teams in the ACC. Because it's worth stating, like, Wake Forest is a good team in the ACC. I think they should be a tournament team without a doubt. So we'll see if they can kind of rally down the stretch here. If that wasn't a must-win game, that Wake Forest game, which I, as far as their tournament chances, I think it probably was. This week's game against Clemson certainly is. They get a few days off. There's no weekday game. Then they travel to Clemson for a 7:45 tip-off on a Saturday, some primetime basketball action. No, am I being hyperbolic here? But it feels like they absolutely have to win this game.
If they want an NCAA at-large bid, they do. I mean, when you look at what they've done this year, they don't have any bad losses, which helps their cause, but they also don't have any great wins. It's kind of a weird thing. They beat the teams they're supposed to beat, and they lose games that maybe it's a toss-up or the underdog. They don't hurt. None of their losses have been back-breaking, you know, losses to a really bad team. Which is a good thing when you look at NC State, but they need a win. And last week going into this 2-game stretch on the road was at least they need to split to kind of keep their hopes alive. 2 wins would have done them a lot of good, but a split kind of is going to be it. Cause when you look at what they have down the stretch after this, they have fairly winnable games against Syracuse and Boston College at home. Should be able to take care of business at PNC in those 2 games. Then it gets tough again with, you know, you look at, they go down to Florida State, whose net isn't good, but they're playing really, really good. And then Duke, Carolina, and Pitt to round things out. So this one's a must-win game, I think. And when you really look at their at-large chances, can only see them losing one more game down the stretch. And it's, you can take your pick of Duke or Carolina. You could afford to lose one of those games, but you got to win everything else in between. And if that doesn't happen, then the State's going to need a run in the ACC tournament and probably a title to get into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think their hopes are starting to dwindle pretty fast here. I think it would have to be a lights-out stretch of basketball to make the big dance at this point. And, you know, that starts against Clemson, who, you know, we can do predictions for that game real quick, Noah, but you look at it, and this is a team that's had NC State's number, like 6 straight losses to the Tigers, dating back to, I believe, 2021. So it's a team that, you know, they've had a lot of success against NC State. I'm not going to predict this one as a win. I think Clemson's, you know, history against NC State will continue. I think they kind of have NC State's number, and I think they're playing, you know, decent basketball right now as well. But Noah, do you have a different take on how that game will play out against the Tigers?
I think if they shoot the ball well and they get multiple guards to show up, I think it gives them a chance. It's really going to be determined in the front court and what they do with P.J. Hall and Ian Shiflin. Those two forwards are playing really good basketball. P.J. Hall is obviously the star of Clemson basketball. And you look at the Tigers, they're playing well. two back-to-back wins. They play against Miami on Valentine's Day, but they played and beat Carolina at Carolina for the second time in, what, 62 games there?
Yeah.
And then they beat Syracuse, and those are both teams that NC State has lost to. So it'll be interesting. I don't know if Pac has enough to be able to do it enough, if that makes sense, and be able to come out on top. It's going to be a tough environment to play in Saturday night in Clemson. It's going to be a good crowd probably on hand. And ESPN gives NC State, you know, just under 20% chance of winning the game. That's kind of where it sits. I don't think that NC State will have enough to deal with both forwards, Ian Schifflin and PJ Hall in this one. Ben Mutterbrooks knows from experience. He played against them, you know, especially PJ Hall backing him up. But it's gonna be a group effort, I think, on the front court. It's gonna have to be a mix of Ben Mutterbrooks and Mohamed Diarra probably on PJ Hall. He's too athletic, I think, for DJ Burns to run with for the entire game. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting, but I don't think this one goes State's way. And if that's the case, then we're really gonna see what this team is made of. You know, not only, you know, just on the court, but I think off the court, because it could snowball really, really fast. And coming home next week, you obviously don't want to see that happen. So we'll see what happens. But I think Clemson's able to take care of business at home against the Wolfpack. But we'll see.
If
NC State plays a perfect game, could change.
And I think they have a little more margin for error against Clemson than they did last year, just because, if you remember last year, those games were not close to end the season. The one in Greensboro and the one in Raleigh, both decided by at least 25 points. And a big part of that is, like, they didn't really have anyone who could guard PJ Hall. He was a really tough matchup. But now you have Mo and Ben Mutterbrooks, who I think are actually, like, pretty good matchups against him. Athletic fours who can face off against them. And of course, Ben's case, his former teammate.
So, he's done it before.
Yeah. So I think they'll be better equipped there. But you know, Clemson's also a good defensive team, and I think they might be able to slow down the Pac's backcourt a little bit, and that's why we have a little cause for concern down the stretch for that game. But let's switch gears, Noah. Let's talk about a little bit of Wolfpack women's basketball. Why don't we? So since we last talked, they've played two games. One was a loss to Virginia Tech, and one was a blowout win over Pittsburgh. Let's talk about the Virginia Tech game first. It felt like, you know, the matchup between two of the best teams in the ACC. Like, there was no doubt in my mind that these are, like, two of the top groups, if the top group in the ACC right now. So you have you went into this game, and you looking at last year's result, where, you know, Georgia Amore just kind of went nuts against the Pack, right, at Reynolds. This year, I thought they did a good job guarding her, and then things kind of unraveled when it came to guarding Liz Kitley underneath the basket and just rebounding as a whole. Rebounding and moving the ball just did not go well for the Pack. They lost the rebounding battle by 17 and turned the ball – and, you know, it was just a tough game for the Pack. Noah, you were there with me in Reynolds. We covered that one together. Electric atmosphere. Shout out to all the fans that were there. It was a really fun game to cover. But any takeaways you had from where the Pack might have struggled and why, you know, they lost for the first time at home in almost a year?
It's the same opponent, too, that last beat them there. Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure that that's not what the Wolfpack wanted. But, yeah, rebounding, I guess you touched on it. That was the biggest problem that they had. Being out-rebounded 48-31. Not a great advantage, especially in a 9-point game or an 11-point game. Math is hard to do. But, you know, it was closer than 11 points for a lot of the game. And NC State just did not have enough. And the rebounding is really what it came down to. Obviously, you know, Liz Kitley is going to score her points. It is what it is. She's going to get 25 fairly easily. So she got against the Wolfpack this time around. NC State, it also went cold for a little while. Mimi Collins 0-for-9 from the field didn't help. And I think that's kind of the biggest difference when you look at anything other than rebounding is their forward's going to get going. You're going to have one of your players get going too. And when one of your better scorers goes 0-for-9 from the field, that kind of tells the story.
Yeah, and, you know, a big part of that was they started the game, like, on fire offensively, right? They went in a 19-point first quarter, helped keep track, keep pace with Virginia Tech, who also started the game well. And then they came out, and then Virginia Tech threw out the zone. And NC State has played well against the zone for big parts of this season. Like, seeing a zone was not a new thing for the Wolfpack, but they couldn't crack Virginia Tech's look out there. And it showed. I mean, you know, they had four assists the entire game. Isaiah James and Sanaya Rivers both had two. No one else on the team recorded an assist. That's not going to win you many ball games. Definitely not many against them top 15 teams in the race for an ACC title. So it just wasn't the Pack's best defensive performance. I thought they did an okay job defending Virginia Tech, especially pretty much every quarter other than the third quarter. They gave up 20 in the third, got outscored by 9, and that's when, you know, things kind of pulled ahead. But Virginia Tech shot the lights out, and NC State didn't, which is one of those games that they happen to most teams. They don't happen often to NC State because they've been playing so well this season. But they bounced back. They were able to rally and bounce back very, very quickly against Pittsburgh, blew them out, and left very little room for doubt in that game. But the only major talking point from that 83-47 win would be that – sorry, I'm trying to open up stats and it keeps auto-playing ads. I don't know if that comes across the podcast feed, but they dominated Pittsburgh, and the only negative was that Mimi Collins left the game a couple minutes into the third quarter with what looked like a knee injury. We haven't gotten an update on her. After the game, Westmore told WKNC that they're going to have to, you know, do imaging, see what the severity of it was, but you know, I have followed up for comment like this week, and you know, haven't heard it. They're not going to share an update until we get closer to the Notre Dame game, because you know, why would they share anything? That would give Notre Dame a competitive advantage there. But Pittsburgh game was great. The injury concerns, not so great. I want to get your opinion on this as well. But if Mimi misses any extended time, I think you have to completely recalibrate your expectations for this season. I mean, she's been amazing this year. Right now she's averaging 11.5 and 6.4 rebounds per game. So one of your top scorers, one of your top players on the board. And I feel like, you know, we'll talk about the Notre Dame matchup in a bit, but she's the exact player you want against a team like Notre Dame that has a stretch four, because she can guard out on the perimeter too. But Noah, if you have any thoughts on the Notre Dame game, on the Pittsburgh game, and then say Mimi Collins misses a couple weeks here, how does that kind of adjust your expectations for how February is going to finish up here for the Pack?
It makes it interesting because, you know, she, as you said, is one of their better players. She's having a career year, you know, with 11.5, 6.4 boards, both of the, you know, career best. And she's been playing really, really well. And, you know, she helped them get through without River Baldwin, you know, playing the five. Yeah. She's a really versatile player. She can play all over the court, which I think is really, you know, something that could hurt them the most. And then the second part is what do they do if she's hurt and can't play? Most likely they're going to start Zoe Brooks and just move people around and play Madison Hayes and the four and just kind of slide everybody down one. And that might work. But if you find a team that's going to play two bigs, then they're going to be, you know, a little bit in trouble and have to play a freshman, either, you know, like a Mallory Collier or, you know, go somewhere that way. And that could be interesting too. So I don't know. It's going to be, I think it's one that hurts more than I think River Baldwin getting hurt is, because, you know, she did so much for this team. And whether it was scoring, offense, defense, and you either replace her with Maddie Cox or Mallory Collier. So I think that takes a hit. So if it's something that's short term, she misses a week or so, I think they'll be okay. But if this is one that they go down to Greensboro without her, then it could be a problem, you know, down the stretch, and we'll see what happens. And you don't want to say it could cost them a one seed, but if she's out for a month, it might. And we'll see what happens.
It definitely could. And that's a good segue into talk about teams playing two bigs. Notre Dame is going to do that, and they'll be in Notre Dame Thursday night for a 6 p.m. tip-off on the ACC network. Notre Dame's going to play two bigs, and their power forward, Maddie Westfeld, is someone who's given the Pack problems in the past. She can get out behind the three-point line and shoot it, score inside. She's a really, really good player. And, you know, Mimi Collins is the perfect player to guard her. Like, she is more than capable of closing out, defending the three, but is a tough player in the paint as well, and would be able to, I think, be an ideal matchup. And, I mean, we don't know her status, but if Mimi misses this game, then that matchup becomes a lot tougher, because suddenly you're playing either Madison Hayes, who's really good defender, really good rebounder. There's a reason why they feel comfortable playing her at power forward. She's also 6 foot. So she's three inches shorter than Westfeld is. So we'll see how that goes. Or you could put Maddie Cox out there, the true freshman, who's 6'2", and has played good minutes at points this season, and see if she's ready to take on a bigger role. But, yeah, Coach Moore said it after the game against Pittsburgh. People are going to have to step up. So this is a really talented team. There's a lot of talent on this roster. So it's just a question of who we're going to see step up, and can they not replace the production, but at least, you know, lessen the blow of Mimi Collins' injury. And we'll see how severe that ends up being. Because of the uncertainty around that game, Noah, I'm leaning towards predicting that game against Notre Dame as a loss. I think it's going to be a tough one. You're going to have to stop Hannah Hidalgo, Notre Dame's star freshman point guard, is averaging over 25 points per game, over 5 steals per game. Both lead the ACC. I mean, I think they have the guards, and between Isaiah and Sanaya, to slow her down. I think it'll be a similar game plan to what they did against Georgia Amor of Virginia Tech. I think but then, you know, they still have Citron is another really, really talented guard over at Notre Dame, and they've got a lot of really talented players. So since it's a road game, first game without Mimi Collins, it kind of has similar shades to me as the first Virginia Tech game. And I think I'm leaning towards a close loss there. Noah, what's your gut going into that game?
I think it's similar. I think if they can control Hannah Hidalgo, I think it gives them a chance even without Mimi Collins on the floor. You know, but then again, Hidalgo does a lot other than just score the basketball. She's a really good scorer, but she's a great elite defender. I mean, you talk about two of the best guards that can defend in the ACC, maybe even the country. You know, it's going to be a cool matchup with her and Sanaya Rivers, so that'll be fun to watch. But otherwise, I just feel like Notre Dame might just have the upper hand if Mimi Collins can't go. But if she comes out of nowhere and can give them some minutes on the court, then, you know, it gives me a chance to lean toward NC State. But I think you're right. I think a tight loss on the road is probably what the Wolfpack might see. And it's not the end of the world. Notre Dame's a really good team. You know, I don't think that this would, you know, cause the sky to fall in Raleigh. But it's just, it would be great to get a win on the road at Notre Dame. But if it doesn't go their way, then it is what it is. They come home and try to reset.
Yeah, even if you lose this one on the road, like, you're the number six team in the country. Even if you lose it, you're probably staying in the top 10 if you respond with a win against Georgia Tech over the weekend. And it's you're still in play for the one seed. At that point, your chances at the ACC regular season title are probably out the window if you lose another one. I think the Pack would probably have to run the table or get close to that down the stretch here. But other than that, your goals will be in front of you. And shoot, it's not like we're sitting here ruling out that they'll go to South Bend and win tomorrow. I wouldn't be shocked by any means if that happened. So there you go. Those are our basketball predictions for the week. We're going to turn our attention to football and a little bit of baseball talk, too, to wrap up the show. But before we do that, just want to say a quick thank you to our sponsor, Game Time. Game Time is a ticket buying and selling marketplace, whether you're looking for tickets to you know, the next women's basketball game, looking for tickets to go see a Canes game, a comedy show, a concert, whatever you're looking for, Game Time has it. And they have great deals for last minute tickets. That's what it's my go-to for last minute ticket buying, especially because if I'm sitting on the couch on a Thursday and I have nothing to do and the Hurricanes tickets are cheap, shoot, why not? I'll go see the Canes this weekend. So If you go and check it out right now, you can go and look on the Game Time app or go to your browser and type in gametime.co, not .com.co. And then you go check it out and you can see exactly the view you would be sitting from before you buy the ticket. It's my favorite thing about the app by far. I'll hold it up to the for those watching on YouTube. We can see, you know, you were sitting in row N in section 309. You'd be able to tell right where you would be. So it's pretty cool. I really like it. You can go to the Blackhawks at Hurricanes game on next Monday for $39. And not only that, Noah, I will sweeten the deal even more for you. Because if you go and you go onto the Game Time app and use code WOLFPACK, that's all caps WOLFPACK, you'll get $20 off your first purchase. So that's you're going to the Hurricanes game for basically like if you went to the movies and got a bottle of water and a large popcorn. So go check it out. Game Time app or gametime.co on your web browser. And yeah, $20 off if you use code all caps code WOLFPACK. All right, Noah. You know, our first few months together covering this beat, we spent all on the football team, and I feel like we took one prolonged deep breath after the bowl game. We took a break, we gave some big picture thoughts, but we kind of switched gears, and now it's time to start ramping up again because there is really no true offseason in college football anymore, and spring practice is just a couple weeks away, and I wanted to talk about it. So we're going to talk about a little bit of what we're going to be looking out for. A couple quick news and notes as far as football goes. NFL Combine invites came out. So Peyton Wilson and Dylan McMahon, the former Wolfpack captains, they'll both be at the NFL Combine. And then Joe Shimko, longtime long snapper, will be at the Specialist Showcase. So good opportunity for them to get in front of all these NFL scouts, you know, take another step towards their dream. But what I wanted to do is – and for those who are, you know, also subscribers to the site, I encourage you to go look. But we published a story earlier this year with our biggest questions surrounding the team going into spring practice. And Noah, what I want to do is I want us to each take one of the six questions that we asked and answered in that story. And let's break it down on the pod. Let's talk through why it's a big question mark, and then try to answer it to the extent that we can, right? At this point, it's a lot of speculation. We have a little bit of intel to back it up that we'll share with y'all. But well, let's each pick one question that we think NC State really needs to answer during its 15 spring practices over the course of February, March, and April here. Noah, do you want to go ahead and go for your question?
Yeah, I'll take one. And I answer this on there. You know, does NC State need a fourth quarterback? Mm-hmm. It's a big question. They've got three scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. Do they need a fourth? And here's the reason why. You bring in Grayson McCall, obviously, you know, the likely starter out of camp. You know, he's the only guy that's taken college start or made a college start in the room. So he'll obviously be there. And then they've got two young guys behind him. And you know, Lex Thomas, who redshirted this past season. And then Cedric Bailey, who's on campus right now as a true freshman. Question is, do they need an experienced backup? And Dave DeWorn talked about it on signing day a little bit, and he basically said, we'll wait and see. If you're comfortable with what they have, they'll ride with it. If not, they'll go and see what's out there. They did kind of explore a little bit what's out there with Ryan Berger from App State, but didn't go anywhere with him, and he ended up, you know, committing to a different school. So we'll see what happens. But I think that question, you know, going into spring practice is one that we don't really know an answer to.
Yeah,
I think we could err on the side of maybe, like, it all comes down to what these two young quarterbacks look like in camp. If they look really good, I wouldn't expect the Wolfpack to do anything. But if there's a chance that they're shaky or they're just not comfortable with rolling with them, then we could see maybe like a sophomore or junior from the portal get brought in just to be that backup. Maybe it's an FCS transfer. Maybe it's a group of five transfer, someone to come in and be a solid backup in the event they need to go to.
Yeah, to kind of set the expectations for that one, like, I think it would be much more closer to like a Jack Chambers type of quarterback, yeah. like you said, an FCS transfer who comes in for his last season of eligibility, maybe just wants a shot at Power Five football, and you know, provides that valuable veteran voice. I don't think they're going to be able to go do like what Oregon did and get Dante Moore, to sit for a year behind Dylan Gabriel. That's definitely an anomaly there. But I think, you know, it's not the spring portal window. It's not quite what the winter portal window is, but it'll be busy. And there will be names out there that I think they'll be able to go get someone if they feel the need arises. I will say, if they don't, then they must. Then I don't think Wolfpack fans have to be worried. I think they should be encouraged. After how the 2022 season went with four different quarterbacks starting games, this staff is well aware of how important the backup quarterback position is. So they're going to be evaluating it very closely throughout the spring. Like that's not a concern. If they don't bring in another quarterback, that's honestly great news, because that means Lex Thomas or Cedric Bailey has shown that they're ready to handle that responsibility right off the bat, in my opinion. And, you know, who knows? We haven't gotten to see much of Lex Thomas, but he was a productive passer in high school. And then Cedric Bailey was, you know, putting up monster numbers. I think Max Preps had his high school Chaminade Madonna as the number two program in the country, the state champion and all of that, and an early enrollee. So there's talent in the quarterback room. It's just, we'll see if anyone steps up. And you're right, that's not a question we can answer right now, because it's going to rely a lot on what we see out of spring practice. All right, I'm going to adapt one of the questions I asked. We went in depth and talked about the linebacker rotation and the story. What's it going to look like? I want to kind of focus it a little bit on just how the heck, Noah, do you replace Peyton Wilson? I mean, you're asking NC State this season to replace one of the most impactful defensive players I've ever seen. Like at any level, just he impacted every single play, it seemed like, defensively. And, you know, you're losing that presence, and it's a big presence. It's a leadership presence on and off the field. You're going to have to fill a void. Noah, what is the linebacker room going to look like this year? Because then, in addition to Peyton Wilson, you're also losing Jalen Scott, who was, I'd say, the second best linebacker in the room last year.
Yeah, they got to replace two linebackers, and that's hard to do. And it's hard to do no matter who the two linebackers are. You lose two starting linebackers, that is what it is, right? But then you look at it and go, wait, one of them is one of the best linebackers ever come through the program. Mm-hmm. And I think that just changes it up a little bit. But when you look at who they have, you can feel pretty good. You know, Caden Fordham, Devon Betty, obviously the two guys that probably slot into the top two spots in the linebacker room just as a whole. If you take all the linebackers and put them together, they're probably going to start. It's about filling that third spot. There are some choices. They can go the freshman route. They've got two guys that redshirted this past season, you know, in Kelvin McBride and Kamal Bonner. Go the JUCO route. They brought in a linebacker, Wyatt Wright. Or go the third route. And the guy impressed against Clemson when he needed to be put at the linebacker spot because Peyton Wilson got hurt. And that's Sean Brown, a safety who impressed in his one drive at linebacker. He had, six or seven tackles on one drive. He was all over the field. So I don't know what they do. There's a lot of options. Obviously, I think Caden Fordham and Devon Betty are obviously probably the sure locks to start.
Yeah.
But that third spot's got a competition. Wyatt Wright is an intriguing guy that can play there, and I think will play no matter what happens. I think he'll get that rotational spot, if anything. But the starting spot, we'll see what happens.
It's a lot of unknowns, and it's not for a lack of talent, right? Like you mentioned the two redshirt freshmen, Kelvon McBride and Kamal Bonner. Those guys are two players who, unprompted throughout the fall, just garnered huge praise by the staff. They came in and really impressed as true freshmen. And it was such an experienced room that, of course, they didn't see much game action. But the talent's there. I really liked both of them out of high school. They both played kind of safety roles almost for a while at their high school team, out for their high school programs. Kel Vaughn was a three-star receiver for a little while. They're athletic, fast players who have now had, more than, or in Kel Vaughn's case, a little less than a year because he enrolled in the summer. But Kamal's been here since last January. So they've had time in a college program to, bulk up, learn the 3-3-5 system, which, asks a lot out of the linebackers. And so I'm very interested to see if one or both of them can step up into at least a rotational role. I think it'd be very great to see them do that, because I think it's going to be a little more linebacker by committee than we've seen last year, especially. And yeah, you mentioned Wyatt. I think he's great. I think he's a really, really good player. Hard-hitting guy, put up big numbers at Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College. Sort of an under-the-radar guy that his ranking rose quite a bit over like the last month of the recruiting cycle. Ended up as like a high three-star. So, you know, I'm optimistic about what he'll do in his years with the Pack. And, you know, it's just all about seeing what happens. And if they don't feel great about it, I bet we could see Sean Brown play linebacker next year. And I think, in my opinion, and this is not in any way reflective of, you know, what the staff views it, I think it'd be great to keep him at safety if they feel like they have a good enough linebacker room to do so, just because I think he can be one of the best, like, in-the-box safeties in the country by the time his Wolfpack career is over. I think he is another Tanner Engel type of guy who can have that sort of impact stopping the run. I thought he got a lot better against the pass as the season went on too. So I really like Sean Brown as a player. Whether he's at safety or linebacker, I think he'll have a really, really good year. All right. Noah, before we get out of here, let's talk a little bit of Wolfpack baseball. Opening day is Friday against VCU. Noah, your alma mater. And a former pro coaching program of Elliot Avent as well. So some history there. You've been around the program a little bit in the run-up to this season. Give us a little breakdown. Where should Wolfpack fans' expectations be heading into the 2024 baseball season?
Should be pretty high, right? You know, NC State's got the pieces to make something happen this year. They've got hitting. They've got pitching depth. It did take a little bit of a hit, you know, with one injury in the preseason. But other than that, they've got enough depth to kind of make it work. And I think they'll be good. You know, they're ranked as high as 13 in the different polls. College baseball is weird where there's like 5 to 6 different polls that come out every week. But they're anywhere from 13 to 22. Most of them have them in the teens. We'll just use whatever one's the highest each week, and we'll go from there. So they're 13th in the country, you know, heading into the season. So high expectations, obviously, trying to get back to the regional. They made it last year, you know, just didn't get out of the Columbia regional. So we'll see. I think the expectation can be to host a regional. I think that they're capable of doing that this year. We'll see. They start off with VCU. Good opponent. Not an elite, you know, top 15 team in the country, but also not a pushover team either. So this will be a fun weekend to get it started off. And Elliot Avent has his degree from VCU, and he can get his 1,000th career win at NC State against them. So that would be kind of cool too. So a little bit of backstory on that. So we'll see what happens. But Wolfpack looks pretty good.
Awesome. All right, folks. That's all from us today. Thank you for watching and listening to the show. We really appreciate it. And there's just a lot going on with Wolfpack Athletics. We didn't even talk about wrestling's got a top 10 matchup this week as well. So it's going to be a busy week for Wolfpack sports. We'll be back next week to talk about it, recap it, and, you know, talk about the major storylines here. But you've kind of gotten through the, like, you know, dead period of the winter. We start to ramp up here when we get to the end of February and into March. It's going to be a lot of fun. We have full coverage of it over on thewolfpacker.com. So go check it out. Only $1 to join for your first month. All right. Thanks, everyone. And we'll see you next week.